and I have with me on the line Rabbi Galperin.
Good morning, Ilan.
Good morning to you. How are you, Rabbi?
I am good, thank God. It's good to be back on air.
Back to routine.
Back to normal life.
No more parties till next year.
So we got a couple of holidays in between.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Not like one after the other.
Not a month.
Then Sukkot and then Simchat Torah.
Yeah.
But it's good, you know, when it is there, it gives us the energy for the whole year, so it's beautiful.
The energy and the weight that we have to work on now.
Well, now it gives us an excuse to go to the gym and work out a little bit.
That's it.
So that's a good thing. It's beautiful.
So that's the second Parsha of Bereshit, right? Parshat Noach?
That's right, Parshat Noach. You know what? These Parshiot, these, you know, in the book of Bereshit, in the book of Genesis, is absolutely beautiful. There are so many.
I agree with you.
I mean, you can spend, you know, we only spend a couple of minutes, but we could spend hours and hours and hours just on one Parsha.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, we see in this historic portion, God instructs Noah, the only righteous man in the world, which is consumed by violence and corruption, and he tells him to build a large wooden teva, a large wooden oak. Coated within and without with pitch. And obviously there's the great dialogue that God is going to wipe up all of the life from the face of the earth, but the ark will float upon the water, which will shelter Noah and his family and two members, a male and a female, of each animal species Noah will bring into the teva,
yeah,
into the ark. And obviously everyone knows that the rain fell for 40 days and nights, and the waters were running for about, before they calmed and began to recede, there was a lot of water for about 150 days. And the ark settled on the famous mountain of Mount Ararat, and from that window that Noah, when he designed the teva, the ark,
yeah,
made a window that he was able to dispatch.
So how?
Right.
Exactly.
And so Noah dispatches a raven and then a series of doves to see where the water is and to make sure that the water is receded, and obviously then the doves don't come back. And God shows Noah a set of rainbows as a testimony with his new covenant with man that God will not bring something like this again. And with that, the parasha of the Torah goes on to a little bit more in detail. However, but the end of the Torah of that portion, this portion concludes with the chronologically of the 10 generations from Noah to Abraham, and as well as from Adam to Noah, and the later journeys from his birthplace, so on and so forth, to the land of Canaan, which we'll talk about next week. It's talking about Abraham. We really got to see, you know, there's a difference between Abraham and Noah, and hopefully we'll be able to discuss that. But God said to Noah, make yourself an ark. And God has many ways to save someone. The question is, why did he want Noah to really go and sit and toil and build an ark? You know, it's going to take him 120 years to build that ark.
Yeah.
No, God could have told him, go and pitch a tent on the top of Mount Ararat and you'll be safe. But the reason is, as brought down in Rashi, the commentator on the Torah, that he wanted the people, they were so evil, that he wanted the people to be able to see that Noah was doing something strange, and they would come and ask him, say, what are you doing? And hopefully bring the message of God to them.
And change them, yeah.
Exactly, to get them to repent. You know, it's brought down in the Zohar, which is the Kabbalah of the Torah. It says, when God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has become before me, even in regards to the animals and so on and so forth, Noah said, what will you do with me? Now, he did not pray for mercy for the world, as Abraham would pray for the city of Sodom. That's why the flood is called in Isaiah, the waters of Noah. Because he really cared about himself and wasn't really there to appeal for the mercy of the world in front of God. So, in other words, we see that Noah's involvement with others was limited to the sense of what he ought to do for them, as opposed to a true concern for their well-being. Because he understood the necessity to act for the sake of another, recognizing that to fail to do so is a defect in one's own character. But he fell short of transcending the self to care for others beyond the consideration of his own righteousness. And this explains as well that the generation later learned from Noah's mistake. That he, you know, Noah, on one hand, sat for 120 years building a teva, an ark. So many thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that were going to be seeing him doing that. Not one. Noah was not successful of even getting one pile of tshuva, one person to repent, to come back to God.
No one.
Not even one. So he failed to win over even a single individual. And the reason is, as it says in the sages, that one's motive must be pure. As the famous expression says, words that come from the heart enter the heart. Dvarim sheyotzim min halev nichnasim min halev.
Exactly.
So if I come and I want to convince you to be able to do something, I have to truly believe in what I'm saying. Truly believe in this idea of what I'm trying to tell you. And then possibly, and hopefully, I'll be able to convince you. But if I want to come and sell you something, and I have no belief that this thing works, or I have no belief that this thing is even worth the money that I'm asking you, you're going to sense something and you're not going to be willing to buy it. So you have to have that connection. You have to have whatever comes from the heart eventually will enter the heart. And so, if your work to enlighten the other person stems from a desire to do the right thing, but without really caring about the result, you're not going to have a response. The echo of a personal motive, be it the most, laudable or personal motive, will be sent, if only subconsciously, by the object of the effort, and will ultimately push him off. So in other words, we see there's a huge difference between Noach and Abraham. Abraham went and he cried, and he begged for mercy for the people of Sodom. He had no interest in it. There was nothing that involved him in it.
Yeah.
But he did it. And later on, the generations later, he was able to reap the benefit of all the generations. However, Noah, on one hand, he was a righteous man. It said, Tamim Ayyabat Aratav.
Yeah.
He was pure. He was simple. He was beautiful. He was pure. He was simple. But it was about him. That's why when God said, all the flesh is the, I'm going to destroy. He asked, what about me? And that's where Noah went wrong. Yes, he was a tzaddik. But the problem was he wasn't true with what he said. And that's huge, tremendous lesson that we're able to get. You know, Abraham reaped the reward from the brotherly love that existed amongst his generation. The generation could not receive the reward as they sinned against God. But Avram rectified the sins of the 10 generations before him through his loving kindness and bringing godliness to everyone. So he was able to save them. He was able to reap the benefit. Noah, on the other hand, did not reap any reward. There was no reward for his generation. And even if they did receive the reward, Noah would have not received it. Because he did not extend himself to his generation. And the incredible life lesson that a person can learn is the value and importance of Ahavat Yisrael, love and respect for one another. But truly love the other person. Not just in a fake way that you're just putting on this beautiful face to be able to appease the other person. But truly mean when you tell that person, you know, I'm here for you. I love you. If there's anything that you need, truly mean it.
Stand behind your words.
Exactly. You know, as well as we are midgets that are standing on the giant shoulders of previous generations. When we act like Abraham, we receive the reward from all of them, from all the generations. Because good is accumulated. And therefore, that is a huge difference between Abraham and Noah. And yes, Noah was a righteous person. So we should try and strive to be like Noah. But we should also strive to be like Avram, beyond Noah, beyond just about me.
Yeah.
How can I help someone else?
Maybe it had something with the drinking problem, you think? No, I'm just
I didn't want to talk about that, but you never know, right?
Yeah, you can never know. Yeah, it's a beautiful parsha. And what is the next one? What is next week?
So then next week we talk about Lech Lecha,
start with Abraham.
That's right. How he's going. Let's talk about it a little bit at the end. How he's going to be asked by God to leave his birthplace, his home place, his hometown,
yeah,
to a land that I will tell you.
Yeah.
That we'll talk about that next week. That is absolute Mesirat Nefesh, self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
To God, I tell you, leave. Where? Just go.
Yeah.
Who's going to go? No one's going to leave. But he did. So we'll talk about that next week.
Good. So the school year started.
Oh, absolutely.
How is the students, the Jewish students group?
It's beautiful. This year is we have a beautiful group of students, new students, second years, third years. We had a welcome barbecue for the students. I don't want to tell you how many pounds of wings and burgers and hot dogs we went through. It was phenomenal.
And they're all kosher.
All kosher, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it was absolutely beautiful. We had a lot of students that came out. Actually, this Friday night, we have a special Friday night Shabbat for students. We're actually doing a sushi Shabbat.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're going to have a sushi chef on hand that's going to be making sushi, fresh sushi. So that's going to be the Friday night dinner for all the students. So we're anticipating a big crowd. So yes, we're off to a beautiful start.
Very good. So Rabbi, I want to wish you a Shabbat Shalom.
You too, and I look forward to talking next week, and there should be a healthy and peaceful week.
Shabbat Shalom.
Be well, Shabbat Shalom. Bye-bye.